Okay, you know what? I actually wasn't able to fix it, but I did get a mic there to the microphone there. Yale, are you there?
Oh, I'm here, right here.
Okay, so hopefully I can get this. Whoopsie-daisy. I'm improvising here, Yale. Good morning once again. I'm glad you can make it. How's life in Florida? And quickly, tell me what you thought of the State of the Union address.
Well, this is, I guess, what is this now, the fourth State of the Union now that we're hearing from Obama. And I guess the reaction from Florida, a lot of people here just sort of listening to it or hearing the same message. Of course, there's a lot about the Republicans and how the Congress isn't doing anything and big emphasis on what he's going to do. I saw a lot of resorting to unilateral actions. He's talking about how he'll bypass Congress and introduce laws on his own, which I, of course, find very interesting because, you know, whether or not you're a fan of the president, I don't really think it's the place of one person to be determining the law for 330 million.
Right, right.
I found that rather troubling.
Let me interrupt you. When he talks about the do-nothing Congress, he ain't whistling Dixie. That last Congress did nothing. They didn't pass a jobs bill. They passed all. They did everything they could to pass all kinds of anti-abortion bills. It was a non-stop flow of those things. But in terms of actually creating jobs and doing anything to help the economy, I didn't see that from the Congress. And I got the sense that the president just decided, well, he was elected. He can't even get Hagel through without a filibuster. So what exactly is he supposed to do as the elected president? Is he supposed to sit there and do nothing? Or, well, as he says, executive actions. I'm gonna take actions. I was elected. What the hell? We're going with it.
Well, see, I would take issue with that because if you read that the Constitution, the job of the president is to protect, defend, and uphold the Constitution. It's not, you know, to be the cheerleader in chief or to do stuff if Congress doesn't want to. Whether or not we think Obama's a good guy, that just sets the precedent that George Bush started of starting all these unilateral actions of the president taking all this on his own without Democratic input. I really don't doubt that the House and Senate will come together and they'll start to do plenty of stuff. I mean, I take the view that the busier that the people are in Washington, the worse off the rest of us are because they're either increasing our taxes or putting more burdensome regulations on people, or they're just, you know, doing laws like you said, a lot of abortion stuff, which really has absolutely nothing to do with anything that the American people are really concerned about.
Right. So far as
I take a different view on it.
Right. So far as corporations go, taxes have never been lower and corporate profits have never been greater. So it's not like he's interfered with people earning a dollar. I'm having a hard time reconciling what the Republicans say, because I really don't think they will cooperate. Watching them, I do believe that the handshake agreement that Harry Reid made to not fix the filibuster with Mitch McConnell was a massive mistake. They should have up and down votes. If you have a majority of the Senate and you're trying to pass some bills, they should allow them to go through. They filibustered more bills than any other Congress in the history of the United States last go round.
Yeah, no, that I don't doubt. And, of course, that's a procedural thing that they're having to work through. And, again, I don't really care about the politics of it individually. I think, you know, institutional barriers like that, you know, at the end of the day, it's really what we're trying to expect from such a small place. It is just one city, Washington, D.C., where they're deciding laws for, again, like I was saying, 330 million people. And I realize that... You know,
but they were elected to do that, Yale. They were elected to do that.
No, I understand that, but that doesn't mean that you know, they have to pass every single law that's ever put forward or put on the floor. I understand your point about the up or down vote, and I agree with you on that. I really have no problem with it. I think it's sort of a shame when you get all these sort of procedural scams that allow one party to, you know, put down any other bill or to even challenge appointees. You know, it's just a lot of weird things going on up there.
There really are. And speaking of a lot of weird things, Matt Taibbi had a piece over in the Rolling Stone, came out, I believe, on Wednesday, and it's about the HSBC scandal. And to me, this relates back to LIBOR. And could there be more corrupt people on this planet than those that are running the banks, those that are basically gaming the financial system that we're watching? And what are we supposed to do about that? It's regulations, you know, the banking system has been deregulated, and of course this seems to be a direct result of that. What would you What do you think is the way forward from here as we watch this?
I think when you create a central bank that allows all these banks and businesses to have all these really extremely low interest loans that basically boost their balance sheets upon billions of dollars, it's inevitable that you're going to have this type of corruption, that you're going to have drug dealers getting their money laundered. That's what the HSBC thing, bank was all about. And nobody's going to get prosecuted at the end of the day. Sure, they'll get a fine, which I think Matt Taibbi was saying amounts to, you know, 5 days of business or something like that. But no one person is going to take responsibility because corporations are legal fictions that are created to help protect individual actors. I think that's problematic, but I still think it goes to the availability of money, of cheap credit from banks like the Federal Reserve, which are not public institutions. They're private. They public, they print the money, they lend it out to all these institutions, and it's billions upon billions of dollars, and even trillions in the case of what happened in 2008. So once all this money is abound, I have no doubt that some corrupt people will get their hands on it, and we'll see what happened with the HSBC thing.
But what's the way forward, though, from here? As we look at this and we see that this is completely corrupt and apparently they're too big to prosecute or too important to prosecute, where do we go from here? What am I rooting for here, Yale?
Yeah, I think we have to be intellectually honest in that every time that we're going to think about putting regulations or going to put some sort of new bill, those will probably be written by the lobbyists. People who have a lot of money and enough money to influence the people writing the bill. So really what I see going forward is we should just respect the law. We should actually prosecute people who commit crimes. We should allow banks to fail. We should allow that to happen, not socialize the risk and make everybody pay. We have to follow the example of Iceland, but to allow these people who make bad decisions to go bankrupt, because that's the market economy that we live in. Supposed to be living in, not the corporatist system that apparently has reigned over us the last 30 years.
Right. Actually, I couldn't agree with you more that what went on in Iceland post the financial crisis is exactly the route we should have taken, and it's a sorry state of affairs that we didn't. Yale, I don't have much time left. What are you working on in Florida that my listeners might want to hear about?
Well, as far as my Florida work, I've pretty much closed up the book. I wrote for Florida Watchdog for about a year. We did waste, fraud, and abuse in government and covered everything from the governor's own scandals to what was going on election day, all the big voting lines, to drones, and so much more. So for that chapter of my life, it will be over, but I'll be taking my investigative journalism over to Vienna, Austria, for a little while. I'll be studying a little bit and trying to continue updating my own show, Liberty in Exile, which, of course, I had a great mentorship from you, Carl, to continue that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I'll be looking more, actually, at the democratic institutions of the European Union and sort of what's going wrong over there. And if we think our banking union is bad over here, it's getting even worse over there in Europe, and that's something I really want to focus on going forward.
Quickly, before I say goodbye, in what way are things getting worse for the banking institutions in Europe?
Well, if you look at the new treaties that are being offered by all these European Commission and the European Council, they're set up as triggers to where if banks start failing, they automatically, without any sort of approval, get money from the governments of the European people.
Okay,
that means that if your bank is failing, automatically you start getting public money pumped into your bank. At least here in the United States, we had some sort of bill and it was passed. But still, through the Federal Reserve and through the European Central Bank over in Europe, that's what's kind of going on. It's the bankers are being able to take over and to have access to these just huge swaths of cash that we would otherwise use to fund social programs.
Right. Actually, this is a story I have followed, and there are no consequences for making bad investments for these bankers. They can invest in anything. If it fails, well, they'll get the money anyway. It doesn't really matter. It's remarkable, and of course, it's especially remarable when you consider what's going on in some European countries like Spain, where they have 26% unemployment, and youth unemployment there is at 55%, which is, to me, that's almost insane, Yale. Have a good time covering all that.
Thanks a lot.
Listen, it's always been great to talk to you. You're always a terrific guest and such an intelligent individual. You know, I have no doubt that if it were you and I on the other side of the tables and we disagree fundamentally on a lot of things, that you and I could find compromises, and it would be nice if people could do the same in government, you know, find that middle ground where we can both kind of, you know, exist and be happy with it. And I see so little of it in politics, but it's nice to talk to you and get some of that back and forth. It makes me happy. I like your perspective. I like it. It's interesting and always fascinated me. Much appreciated, Yale.
Well, thank you very much, Carl. And I quote from your good friend Mitt Romney, that's because we're in the private sector.
This is a little community radio station. What do you mean? What are you, private sector? Profit? What? Listen, much success in the future for you. I hope you have a great time in Vienna, and I look forward to hearing from you in the social media, and if I ever get back on the air, I'll be sure to contact you again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Carl. I look forward to having you on Liberty in Exile as well.
I would like that. Yeah, contact me, and we'll do that. I'd be absolutely glad to.
Sounds good.
Cheers, Yale.
Cheers.
Okay. There you go. We're back. We improvised. Our usual little system there wasn't working, so I made it work. I'm patting myself on the back as we speak. 9:43 here at 1690. We're coming up to the last 15 minutes or so of the program. So tell me what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a brief ad, come back, we'll talk a little bit, say goodbye, and then I'll play some music, take you up to the top of the hour, and Democracy Now!, which is featured here on CJLO Monday to Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning till 11 every day. A great antidote, a great alternative to mainstream media. Absolutely a terrific program. I'm proud to broadcast it here on 1690. Stick with it.
Visit LibertyInExile.com.